to return to the way we were. And I'm hoping and praying that our young people will step up again and say, no, we're not going back.
Janice,
that's what those two legislators did.
Thank you so much for being with us. Longtime civil rights activist in Birmingham, Alabama, and Paul Kicks, You Have to Be Prepared to Die, his new book. Thank you.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook, operating at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet on WUSB.FM. It's just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, which means, once again, it's time for another episode of Off the Wall. knew it was hot when I drank it, Kyle.
I was just warning you.
What's the point of bringing hot coffee if you can't drink it immediately? I mean, I know it's hot.
There's levels and degrees. Whatever.
And this is 212 degrees Fahrenheit, which is fine.
It's right off the old machine.
Did we get behind somebody in one of the coffee shops where they demand a particular temperature?
You can ask a specific temp.
Do people really know the difference in temperature? Can they tell?
Well, they probably have different ways of telling. To some people, it's a amount of time it takes before they get to a certain place to enjoy their coffee,
mm-hmm.
or maybe they're in a hurry and they know that they have to go through a huge refrigerated facility.
I wouldn't even know what temperature to ask for. You know, there's hot, there's scalding.
Maybe it's on a back of a bicycle being delivered and it takes some kind
I think people are just spewing out numbers, and they maybe see on the machine what number it says, but I don't think they know the difference.
If you ask someone what the normal temperature is, uh-huh. for a coffee drink at whatever coffee shop, I don't know that someone could tell you in any degree.
I think
they might say boiling.
It would be a fun game to have, you know, 3 cups of hot coffee or hot whatever, and just tell the person, okay, so which one is 100? I don't even know what number is right. 150? 20? I don't know.
Espresso, 120 Fahrenheit.
120 Fahrenheit. Okay.
Right. Espresso is probably around that. When it's ready to be, but you should drink it somewhere within like a minute or 30 seconds.
So espresso is like the same temperature as a hot day in Vegas. That's interesting.
It's hot. I mean, it's really pretty hot.
Okay.
When, you know, you don't want to wait too long, then it cools down a lot. Some people like it a little bit colder, or they add their sugar or something. Same with black coffee. Like, if it's just sitting in a decanting kind of thing that you pull a lever, how hot is that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's warming temperature for a big multi-cup coffee?
Of this is keeping me from drinking my coffee. Excuse me.
I am just trying to buy you some time there. Is it hot enough?
I feel the burn going down past my tongue, into my throat, esophagus, stomach, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's important to kind of melt away whatever might be in the way. So
you're sensing temperature.
I'm sensing pain.
Okay.
But it's a good kind of a pain.
Well, it wouldn't be hot coffee if it wasn't indeed hot. So that is what we're promising here is hot coffee.
I don't care for cold coffee. I don't.
No. Cool coffee, I mean iced coffee. We're almost on iced coffee season, cold brew.
No, iced coffee is fine. It's cold coffee I don't like.
Yeah, cold. But cold coffee can become iced coffee.
I don't believe that.
No, if you have a mug and it's more than 3/4 full, okay, if it's got anything in it.
We're just going to have another argument about this. I don't think that's possible.
You add ice, maybe a little sugar, you know, you could put some kind of creamer of your choice in there. You've got yourself a nice ice drink.
It's
like recycling, yeah.
Agree to disagree on that. But the coffee's fine, nice, hot, and gives you a burst of energy, I'll say that. And we're going to need that to get through this hour. Not that it's an ordeal or anything like that, but we don't have our writers anymore. They're on strike, so we have to sort of wing it on our own. And haven't had to do that in 15 years. It's okay, though. It's okay. We're clever enough. We can talk about things on our own without all the comedy writers that normally we employ.
I can't think of anything.
No, coming up empty.
Hmm.
Well, I think I'll take another sip of this coffee and kill a few more seconds that way.
It's about speaking to what you know. And here in radio,
oh boy, that's good.
The coffee's hot. It is therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
We are that hot coffee for your soul with a lot of news coming your way.
I spilled coffee on my keyboard before, and it actually started working better. I think what happened was there was grime in the keyboard, and it kind of cleared it out, and the keys just feel better now.
Caffeinated computers do work somewhat, like, more
fluidly. Don't listen, kids, don't listen to what the experts tell you, because they're usually wrong. Coffee on your keyboard is just fine. Hey, let's talk hockey, because that's what everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you hear about this, Kyle? First of all, Rangers got eliminated. I don't know why I'm happy about that, but I am. For some reason, I think because some idiot in a pickup truck with a big a Rangers flag and for some reason a Trump flag cut me off. Somehow, every time I hear about the Rangers now, I think about that. So fine, they got eliminated by the New Jersey Devils. So way to go, Jersey. I'm with you on this one. But the Florida Panthers, did you know there was a team in Florida? Of course, there's a hockey team in Florida. Because that's what the NHL does. They decide to not go to Canada and go to as hostile an environment for hockey as you can possibly imagine, where people don't care. And what they've done, they are so worried about fans from the other team showing up for their playoff game against the Toronto Maple Leafs that they have banned non-U.S. citizens from buying tickets, at least in the first part of ticket sales. So that means only American citizens, i.e. Florida Panther fans, they actually think they're one and the same, will be able to buy tickets, and they base this on the credit card address, the billing address of the credit card. Apparently the Toronto Maple Leafs have this this image, a reputation of having their fans in every city where there's a game, and sometimes outnumbering the home team fans. And in a place like, you know, they don't even name the city. I don't know where they play. The Florida Panthers, where they play in all of Florida. Why do some teams have the state name and some teams have the city name? Do they bounce around? I mean, you know, the California Angels, remember them? They played in Anaheim. I guess you couldn't say Anaheim. But the Florida Panthers, yeah, apparently they don't have that many fans, so they're worried that the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to have more fans, so they just banned those fans. But you know what they might get? They might get a half-empty Coliseum then. And that's not going to look good. So the first game is tonight, and you know who I'm rooting for. First of all, it's been like, what, 30 years since a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup? You know, I got news for you. Hockey comes from Canada. Most of the players are from Canada. And what the NHL management does is they simply open up franchises in all these different places and neglect Canada where they belong.
Well, and they infuse those places with a lot of money and sort of force them to be the attractive employers for a lot of those players, mm-hmm. and it really dilutes some of those big cities in markets that are not American. So it's particularly ironic that there's some exclusivity over nationality here, given the old structure of the National Hockey League.
Well, the first game is tonight in Toronto. The message on Ticketmaster's website said orders by residents outside of the United States will be canceled without notice and refunds given. So Toronto's hosting the first two games today and Thursday, and then the action shifts to Florida for the next two games, and they could host a game six as well. Winnipeg Jets got eliminated. I'm very upset by that. They got eliminated by the Las Vegas team whose name I don't even know. And that is just so painful. That is just so painful that a team from a fake city in the desert.
Aren't they knights or something?
Something. Who knows? And, you know, Kyle, I'm sorry, but you should talk. You stole a team. Your city, Seattle, stole a team from Quebec. Okay, that should be the Quebec Nordiques. Instead, it's a Seattle Kraken. And I resent them very much. And how dare they be in the playoffs in their first year? I'm sorry. I mean, Seattle deserves a team more than Las Vegas does or Florida. But you can't tell me that Quebec or Toronto deserves a second team. You know, there are so many places. Winnipeg sold out all their games forever. That's how enthusiastic they are. It doesn't matter that they get eliminated, that they don't actually win the Stanley Cup or whatever. People are happy to see the game there, and that should be appreciated. It's the border. It's finances. It's the Canadian dollar versus the American dollar. It's not about the game. It's about the finances, and that's a shame.
Yeah, it turns into more about the show and the production than, and that, granted, that is a factor. You do have to host these things, and of course, hockey itself has some technical requirements given the lack of frozen conditions in a lot of the markets they're putting this in.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think they would go north and go places where there's more ice, but they need spectators, so it's the sort of
Well, they have spectators. They have so many fans. Everybody in Canada is a fan. You know, not to generalize too much, but it's certainly true. You know, a place like Arizona or Vegas or Florida or Texas, you're not going to have as many hockey fans. Yeah, I'm sure there are kids who want to learn how to play hockey and follow the game and all that. But as far as where the roots are, where people are constantly playing, it's like saying, you know, we're going to have a soccer league and leave out England. You have to look where the enthusiasm actually is.
I'm not going to defend it. You're absolutely right. I'm with you. I hear you.
All right. Let's move into some non-sports news for a change.
Please.
Swastikas. Yes, swastikas were found last week on three separate desks. Guess where? At the Shoreham Wading River High School. Yeah, the second such incident in the past 2 months, according to the district superintendent. They keep track. They're keeping track of all the swastikas they find in their schools. Now, for those who don't know, the Shoreham Wading River is to the east of Stony Brook, and is where the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant would have operated had it not been shut down by the people. And we'll talk about that some other time. The district has contacted the Suffolk County Police Department and will fully cooperate in their investigation, said Superintendent Gerald Poole. He wrote this in a letter to parents on Thursday. The individual or individuals responsible for defacing school property with such a hateful image will be held accountable and will be disciplined in accordance with the district's code of conduct. Late last month, an undisclosed hate speech was found at the district's Albert G. Pradell Middle School in Shoreham. This is totally unacceptable behavior that causes pain and sadness to individuals and goes against the district's efforts in trying to provide and maintain a positive learning environment where everyone can feel accepted, safe, and respected. The district continues to educate our students about the importance of social-emotional learning and tries to cultivate a sense of unity and inclusion in our school community with different age-appropriate lessons at each of our buildings. Very wordy, but obviously we have a problem. Now, there are people who would say, oh, my God, all this inclusiveness, it's terrible, it's so woke. And places like Florida, the swastika is probably a part of the curriculum now. But this is something that you can't be surprised is happening. Based on all the hatred that's out there, all the anger, all the racism, all the ignorance, of course this is happening. And kids are affected by this. I'm assuming it's a kid. Could be a teacher, I guess. I mean, how did they get into an elementary school and a high school? But this is something that you can expect to see a lot more of. What surprised me, this is a Newsday story, and they somehow managed to miss the fact that only a couple of days earlier, a message of hate was found at a primary school in Miller Place, which is right next to Shoreham Wading River. I don't know if the reporters just missed that story, but yeah, it happened again. The message was found written in chalk on a sidewalk at the Andrew Muller Primary School. The school says it reported it to police on April 24th at 12:54 p.m. They keep records. The Miller Place School District sent a message to parents saying the district does not tolerate discrimination of any kind, and the graffiti has since been removed. And in addition, the school district says disciplinary action has already been taken. So they know who did that one, apparently. And apparently it's a kid because they're not revealing any information. Which is fine. You know, kids do stupid things all the time. But they have to know they're doing something stupid. And they have to know why it's something stupid and hateful and harmful. You know, it's just the kind of thing that, yes, shouldn't be tolerated. But we should also understand why it's happening.
Yeah, I think also the contextual nature of the teaching that goes on, because this stuff is taught, but it needs to continuously be taught, and it needs to be conveyed as something that is truly alarming and not something that can just be played around with and subject of fascination. It has to be deeply, like, you know, deeply understood so that it's not portrayed as something in a way that kids just aren't really getting the true impact it has for a lot of people. I mean, there's graffiti of all kinds in school, mm-hmm. but kids got to know that there's plenty of things to draw and that this is not something that they're going to stand for, like, perpetuating. I mean, but you don't have a lot of, like, I don't know how much formal, hate symbol classes are taught, but certainly the history around this symbol and what it means needs to be reiterated and not taken out of curriculums, which right. we're seeing so much of in general. So all the more reason to really spread truth about what this history is, about why symbols and signs that we attribute to it mean so much in public spaces, because not everyone has the same experience with those symbols. And it's, yeah, maybe something that you just learned, but some people have deep, deep pain and a very close lived experience with it. And we need to, like, really talk about that, like the mm-hmm. variance in society and why empathy for how these symbols, perpetuating these symbols, how destructive that is in others' reactions, and that their experience should be honored. It may be something you just learned, but it's so important to give it a greater meaning where so that everyone understands why it's taboo and why we respond like this to it.
There's always been hatred, racism, sexism, homophobia, you name it. I think we're seeing more of it coming from up in governmental circles, from leaders, from people on TV, than we've seen in the past. And we've certainly seen plenty in the past, but it seems to be more overt now, and that's having a trickle-down effect on people. So we need to understand. We need to explain. We need to teach our kids why this is wrong and what it means. And you can't avoid that. You can't go like some of these red states are doing and say we're not going to teach about the bad parts of our history. We're going to make America look good and just gloss over the bad things. You don't learn that way. You don't learn anything, and you simply make brand new and worse mistakes. Here's something out of Nassau County that a Wantagh reverend is doing. For 13 years, Reverend Ron Garner has posted messages outside the Wantagh Memorial Congregation Church. He says, "I always try to make people think, and lots of people agree with my signs, and of course, lots of people disagree." He has a sign. I'm looking at a picture of it right now. It's pretty awesome, I think. He recently posted a rainbow banner and a sign reading, "No human is illegal. God." I.e., God is saying no human is illegal. And certainly that is something I think we can all agree with. How can a human be illegal? But of course, there are people who took exception with that. Garner received a handwritten, unsigned letter that read, "I'm sure you believe your illegal alien and gay stands are humanistic and Christian, teaching and supporting gay education and undermining our country through massive illegal immigration is communism 101. He says the intolerance expressed in the letter was troubling and concerning. He says he wishes the author of the letter left his or her name so he could respond. And he hopes people can learn to come together despite their differences. No matter where you are on the political spectrum, Garner says, we need to lower the temperature and try to get over some of the divisions. I was on News 12. I'm kind of surprised that made it to News 12. Basically an angry letter. I mean, we've gotten angrier letters here at Off the Wall. But it's important to focus on the issues. It's not a crime to write an angry letter. It's certainly within someone's right of free expression. But if there's ignorance out there, we need to focus on it and try and have a conversation. Now, here's another example of that out of Michigan. Mother of two students in Howard City, Michigan, has filed a lawsuit claiming the public school district violated her son's First Amendment rights by asking them to remove sweatshirts with the slogan, "Let's Go Brandon," on them. The lawsuit was filed last Tuesday against the Michigan Tri-County Area Schools District. An assistant principal and a teacher claims that their school censored her son's peaceful, non-disruptive politics by having them take off the sweatshirts, causing them to suffer irreparable injury. The phrase, "Let's Go Brandon," was born of a viral NASCAR race moment in October 2021. It's understood to be code for swearing at President Biden, the lawsuit confirms. The slogan conveys the same opposition as saying a four-letter expletive and then Joe Biden, just sanitized to express the sentiment without using profanity or vulgarity. That's according to the lawsuit. In February of 2022, the mother's sixth-grade son wore a Let's Go Brandon sweatshirt to Tri-County Middle School. The assistant principal at the school stopped him in the hallway and asked him to take it off, according to the lawsuit, telling him the slogan was equivalent to the F-word. He took it off because he feared getting in trouble. The suit said the student wore the sweatshirt again in early 2022 and was asked by a teacher to take it off, adding, "I've told you before and won't tell you again." In May, the student's older brother, and they really have a thing for this slogan, an eighth grader at the same school was removed from class and asked to remove his Let's Go Brandon sweatshirt, according to the lawsuit. The dispute centers on whether the phrase contains or constitutes as profanity. In June, the school district said in a letter released by its lawyers, the district prohibits clothing or styles of expression that are vulgar or profane. Let's Go Brandon is transparent code for using profanity against the president. Okay, I'm going to stop right here and say to this particular school district, Michigan Tri-County Area Schools District, you need to stop. You need to call these people. You need to profusely apologize and say that you're dumbasses that let your beliefs get away from you, and that walking around with a T-shirt that says, "Let's Go Brandon," is not profanity. It's an expression. It's a funny expression. Even the president uses it. Even the president has embraced it. The White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday, he brought out Dark Brandon. It's perfectly fine to express your opinions. Now, you can say what they're embracing is Trump ideology. Okay, you know, it's disturbing, I guess, when kids do that, but they have the right to. And to say that this is profanity? No, it's not profanity. It's stupidity for a school district to say that kids can't wear something that has a slogan on it. That doesn't contain any four-letter words. And there are all kinds of other slogans I'm sure you can point at that do similar things, that are implying something that they're not saying. So please, don't dig yourself in any deeper than you already have. This is not something that most people I know would support at all. And it happens. People just kind of get carried away with their beliefs, and they believe anything that runs counter to it, to those beliefs, is some kind of a threat, when actually you become the threat. When you start making barriers and rules and giving people a lot more to fight for and building opposition that I assume you don't want. So, yeah, this is the silliest story of the week, I think.
Yeah, I think you may be onto it. It's true that it does have sort of a derogatory connotation, but it technically isn't transgressing in a literal sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the more attention you're giving it more power. And that's exactly what, like, the administration has done the opposite of. They just leaned right into it. Fine. Yeah. Okay. Haha. Great. Yeah. Now we're going to change what it means entirely because it's not an insult, the way they think it is. And I don't know. You know, it's murky enough because of that, you know, the less attention, it might be better overall. And you could get through educationally to this student maybe in other areas that are more worthwhile. This maybe isn't the lesson that they think it is, like you're saying. Although I do think, like, it is meant to be an insult. But
that's fine. You can insult people. You can say things
sure.
like that.
Sure. Yeah. And
to tell kids that you're not allowed to say a phrase like that, what kind of picture does that give them of what democracy is?
Yeah, I can't think of an example where, given another phrase or turned, you know, flipped around politically or like the polar opposite, where you'd want to, like, allow that. I mean, there are things on shirts you can't necessarily condone based on whatever your policy is in mm-hmm. in a school, but an idea associated with an actual phrase, I don't know how it's such a leap that it's really hard to defend.
Look, their whole thing is that it's profanity. We're saying it on the radio. We're not allowed to use profanity on the radio. And we're saying, let's go, Brandon, and it's fine. Okay? We all can figure out what it's actually saying or what it actually means, but it's an expression that is perfectly acceptable to utter. You know, you can get into the mentality behind it and have conversations about that, but once you start banning phrases, going down a very, very dark road, then...
And not every student is, you know, going to be exactly the kind of winner you think you can make them.
Well, also, I think, you know, a lot of students will simply wear a shirt like that just to go against a stupid rule.
Which is typical.
Even if they don't believe the phrase.
Yeah.
And that is the effect that you have when you have stupid policy like this. Anyway, moving on, talking about idiots. Yeah.
It's also bait from their parents.
George Santos. George, we're moving on, Kyle.
Sorry,
George Santos has targeted a North Shore High School student for being in a drag show. Yeah, Great Neck North High School had a talent show, and there was a drag performance by one of the students. And George Santos feels it's his place to comment on this and try and shame the student in public. Why is this guy still around? I don't understand. Why can't we get rid of him? Santos told News 12 he believes drag is not age appropriate and should not be in schools. You know who shouldn't be in school? You. You should not be anywhere near high school students. Right? You should not be judging them. This is their talent show. Let them do what they damn well please. And stop with the obsession. I'm speaking to all the right-wing idiots that are doing this. Students and parents in attendance say the congressman is taking the video out of context. Alexandra Robini, who is a parent from Great Neck, said everyone was in tears, choked up, and felt the love in the room. And that's what it was all about. It was about a student expressing himself. Great Neck Board of Education President Rebecca Sassolini says Santos has blown the situation out of proportion. And meanwhile, the students will continue to run the school talent shows in the future, as they have every right to.
Yeah, the thing with that, I mean, I think being portrayed as a drag show, that's the slippery slope here. And, like, on college campuses in sort of student activities at an adult age, I think it's wholly different. With a mixed environment in high school, I've never heard of that necessarily. There are student organizations and clubs and people that have interest. And in the context of a talent show, there's elements of fashion.
Yeah, it wasn't a drag show. It was
theatrical stuff, performing,
music. It
was
a drag performance at a talent show.
Exactly. Makeup and other things. Those are all, I think, valuable in the context of a talent show that someone... who may be the only person there that is brave or, you know, willing to share a side of themselves like that in an environment that is being made available for students to step out of the ordinary spotlight or you know, the group necessarily mm-hmm. in school. You get to shine a little bit and that can be deeply revealing. And so I think if they're going to try to create that environment, they should actually foster that and not allow this kind of commentary to dissuade them, or be portrayed as, like what I said, something more than it actually is. And it isn't some kind of educational value.
The town of Huntington, the village of Northport, are getting ready to kick off their Pride celebrations next month. That's right. Huntington has been home to Long Island's first Pride parade. They'll be hosting a parade on June 11th after a seven-year gap. Yeah. And that parade will be followed by a festival at Heckscher Park. So all of this nonsense is going to be... Drowned out by celebration. Attendance at the 2016 parade in Huntington was down, so organizers... sought to change location. It was held in Long Beach for the next 3 years. In 2020, the parade was virtual because of COVID-19, and a hybrid celebration was held in Eisenhower Park in 2021. Last year, it was held in Farmingdale Village. But according to the president and CEO of the New York LGBT Network, David Kilmnick, this was our long-term plan to return to Huntington, and it means a lot, comfort, safety. It's community. We're back someplace where we are welcome. And the LGBT Network is in the process of applying for a parade permit with the town. The town board will vote on a resolution to approve the use of Heckscher for a festival at its May 9th meeting. So I hope to see that prosper and grow and become a very positive event, as it has been. All right, now we move into the not-so-nice stuff. Of course, yet another, I say yet another mass shooting, but there have been so many. It's only one more in the last week. But this one is particularly disturbing because of all of the things that it highlights. I'm talking about what happened in Texas, where basically an entire family, or a good part of the family, was wiped out by a crazy person who took exception to somebody asking him to stop firing his assault weapon, or assault-style weapon, whatever you want to call it, in his yard next door while kids were trying to sleep. Now, what's sick and insane about this is if you read into the story, you find out that this is a neighborhood where this sort of thing is common. Yeah, people in this this rural town north of Houston are used to people firing their weapons to blow off steam. Yeah, people just fire off their weapons outside their houses to blow off steam. And that is considered normal. And it was only a matter of time before some kind of a dispute arose where somebody asked somebody to stop doing something, and they took exception and apparently had been drinking at the same time. But with such easy access to such horrible weaponry, it was easy. It was easy to do this heinous act. And apparently it's also easy to completely get away with it and disappear. Now, the way that this has been handled in the media and by politicians has been really disturbing, because a lot of the attention has turned, believe it or not, to the immigration status of the victims. Yeah, the governor of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott. Let me find you the tweet. This is what he wrote in response to five people, including one child, being murdered by this lunatic. "I've announced a $50,000 reward for info on the criminal who killed five illegal immigrants Friday." That is how he defines those human beings. To him, they're nothing more than illegal immigrants. Goes back to the Reverend in Wantagh, saying human beings cannot be illegal. And for him to focus on that was just so sickening. And he's the governor. And you wonder why there is such hatred and why there are such acts like this when it's encouraged with that kind of speech. He walked it back a bit, saying he regrets saying that. But you know he's going to keep saying things like that. He's going to keep signing laws and make it easier for people without any background check, without any training, to get their hands on weapons. Yeah, now they're focusing on the immigration status of the person who did this. As if that matters. The fact is, he was in this country where he got his hands on those weapons. You know, American citizens are no different than citizens from any other world when it comes to firing guns. They act the same way in anyone's hands. And the fact that this guy was deported four times? Interesting, but it's a different conversation. And, okay, just, you know, if we're going to go down that road, let's look at when this guy was deported. He was deported in September 2009. He was deported in January 2012, July 2016. And actually, I missed the first time, March 2009. Who was running the country when this guy was deported? March 2009, Obama. September 2009, also Obama. January 2012 and July 2016, both Obama. So what do we learn from that? That people who are in the country illegally are deported, which is what's supposed to happen, right? Sounds like the Obama administration was catching this guy every time he got into the country. Nothing happened under Trump. Not a single deportation. So this guy wasn't touched under Trump. They're not saying that. They're not focusing on that little fact. So look, if you're going to talk about immigration status at a time like this, well, okay. There's other ways you can look at this. But it's got nothing to do with the crime, with what happened. And the fact that people are trying to turn this into an immigration issue when it's clearly a gun issue, and yet another example, it's unforgivable. It's absolutely unforgivable. I want to read you a quote from the former conservative Chief Justice of the Supreme Court named Warren Burger. He said this in 1990. Again, the conservative Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. He said, "The gun lobby's interpretation of the Second Amendment is one of the greatest pieces of fraud. I repeat the word fraud on the American people by special interest groups that I have ever seen in my lifetime. The real purpose of the Second Amendment was to ensure that state armies, the militia, would be maintained for the defense of the state. The very language of the Second Amendment refutes any argument that it was intended to guarantee every citizen an unfettered right to any kind of weapon he or she desires." Again, conservative Chief Justice of the United States, Warren Burger. So there are people who saw exactly what was going on in the decades since Reagan, where this has been completely perverted and turned into this horrible threat to our sanity, our country, our democracy. We're in a situation now that it's going to be extremely difficult to get out of, but we have to get out of it if we're going to survive. And I'll tell you, these small laws where, okay, let's raise the age from 18 to 21 to get a weapon of war, they're really trivial. They do help. There's no question about that. They definitely help, but they're not enough. We have to get rid of these things, period. We have to change our mentality, our outlook. People are shooting each other because they assume they have more weapons than they do. Where does this end? It's a really sickening thing to see around you. Now, here in New York, we talked about the gun buyback. Over 450 firearms got off the streets in Hopog, which is great. A bunch of assault weapons, 185 assault rifles statewide, 38 assault rifles here in Suffolk County were brought in, no questions asked. A total of 3,076 guns were turned in statewide. You know, there are a lot more guns out there, but those guns are no longer going to be a threat. So it's a start. If we keep doing things like this, and people see the opportunity in getting a reward for turning this in, we have less and less. You'll still have problems as long as there's even one out there, but not like this. We have to move on that path. Washington State, Kyle's home state, governor just signed a bill, a law that bans the importation sale of assault-style weapons, which is a great thing. Unfortunately, it doesn't go far enough because people can still own them. But hopefully one day it'll get to that point as well.
Maybe people will choose not to in light of the kind of restrictions on sales, realizing just that overall the gun market there just doesn't really see a place for this in as far as broader availability and I think that the states themselves can defend themselves, and this sort of paranoia around gun regulation, in other words, having higher stakes for people that have ready access to them, like in the case in Texas. If the stakes were higher for this person, I think maybe it would have been less apt to happen. Maybe not in all cases with people that are really out, you know, out of their minds and you know, violent. But generally, I think the behaviors can change around ownership and so forth. But it's not that, you know, but continuing the other way, you know, as an alternative, because continuing the other way, you're then basically pitting yourselves against the state, because the violence and the threat, the behaviors and the perpetrators of this are actually coming from within each state. So look at the train. I mean, they're already basically running into these situations and dropping the person first thing, because there's no talking about this. There's no deliberating. There's no, it's like the state has decided how they will handle people who point these weapons and use them on the public. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. And so basically your local officer turns into the militia. They are sanctioned to address threats like this. That's it, nationwide. So the more behavior around brandishing this kind of stuff that you allow, you're going to perpetuate confrontation with authorities, with people, the state representatives of it, who do have the authority to drop you. And you'll be matched. This isn't like any more of the like, you know, the National Guard's just going to show up with beanbags if you decide to become a mass shooter like this. That's not how it works. Maybe like, you know, a little protest, a little action, there'll be that kind of equipment. But if you want to act, you know, in public with this kind of weaponry, you will see the level of equipped sanctioned militia that is out there. So the idea that you're going to replace that, to me, is bonkers.
Well, yeah, and I think you're speaking to a very small group of people that believe that is possible.
It's nonsense. That's why it's
but
a fraud.
But
like
all
you
the
said.
Other people who are afraid now because of the weapons that are out there and overreact, thinking they're doing the right thing, but doing a horrible thing instead, and it just spirals from there. We have to change direction. And, you know, what the Chief Justice said in 1990 really resonates, because we've gone down this path where misinterpretation of what the Second Amendment was supposed to be all about in the first place has reigned supreme, and it's a nightmare scenario now. We have to take emergency action to do something to reverse this progression, where everyone is just it's a free for all, where everyone's shooting each other because, you know, we don't know what they're going to do next. It can be done, but it's going to require a lot of effort and a lot of enforcement. And it's not pretty. It's not pretty, but it was something that was warned against many, many years ago when we started going down this path. And it wasn't like this before. If you go back, 40, 50 years, it was not at all like this. It had the same Second Amendment, you know, there were guns around and you didn't have this kind of an environment. So clearly, this is negative. This is something that needs to be changed.
And if you watch the news and ground battle, in modern days, drones are where it's at anyway. It might save your life. So trade up.
Look, you know, you bring up drones. Reminds me of war. What's happening in Ukraine right now, where people need guns because they're being invaded by a foreign power. They have no trouble getting the guns. All right? When a situation like that happens, there won't be a shortage, guaranteed, but you certainly do not need them in your house right now. You may think you do because of what your next-door neighbor has in their house, but we have to clean our houses. We have to basically get, you know, if necessary, one by one off the streets. You pay people for turning them in like we did in New York State last week, and every time you do that, you have less, and you stop selling the damn things as well. And, you know, if you want to fire guns, There are places you can do that. Not in your front yard. Not next to your neighbor. You know, not in public.
Yeah, the emphasis should be on making the cities and places safer, our communities safer. But, yeah, in, given if there was a time and there was a need, like in a situation where you're being occupied, yes, the weaponry will flow like any other resource. And that is, you know, and you can think about that all you want. You can be prepared and, you know, imagine things all you want without, you know, having all kinds of hardware around you. You know, if you want to organize like emergency community response, emergency, you know, preparedness, that's all fine. That's great stuff. It's transferable to wartime stuff, but it is not smart to just be having more and more hardware everywhere without some kind of organization and more, you know, healthy behaviors.
We are going to have to start wrapping up because I have a long song to go out with. And Gordon Lightfoot, yeah, a giant in the Canadian music scene, passed away yesterday. And, you know, when I first joined the radio station, the song I'm about to play was a number one hit. I remember this. We would hear it in high school. In fact, we'd make fun of it, make our own lyrics. But this guy was an incredible songwriter, an incredible musician, and I didn't realize just how memorable all these tunes were until I heard the news last night. Hadn't thought about him, hadn't listened to that old music, and I'm just kind of going down memory lane, thinking about all this. But the song I'm referring to has to do with a shipwreck that took place on the Great Lakes in 1975, and he wrote this song in 1976. You know, less than a year later, the song was out, and it was an incredible recounting of this this freighter that was sunk in a severe storm with the loss of all 29 crew members. And I guess I took for granted just how well it was written, just how amazingly it told the story. And you don't get that very often. You really don't get that very often. I didn't appreciate it enough, I don't think. So I hope if you don't know anything about the Edmund Fitzgerald, about this this ship that sunk in 1975, please listen to the song. And if you've never listened to the song, I think, you know, you're in for a treat because it's just so well put together. There's a section towards the end where basically Gordon Lightfoot defines every lake and just describes what each lake is known for. And it's just such a pleasure to listen to. And it brings back memories, brings back so many memories. Now, there are a lot of hit songs that he had as well, and you'll probably hear those on other stations, other shows. But I wanted to play this one, even though it's a bit long. It's worth taking the time, I think. And, Kyle, I don't know if you ever heard Gordon Lightfoot, but you're about to hear him now.
Yeah, he probably played once or twice, but I don't know, like, by heart and from any kind of experience in my life.
Well, I hope you're one of the people who listens to the lyrics of this, because it tells a story. It kind of reminds me of Stan Rogers, the way he told the story. But this guy was, I think, more, who was also Canadian, by the way. He I think, was more commercially successful. And again, it was on all the AM stations, you know, played constantly. But oddly enough, now after his passing, very little American coverage of who this guy was. So let's take a listen to the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. A bit of history here, and enjoy the story. Please write to us otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and have fun out there.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitchagumi. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and good captain well seasoned, concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. Then later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the north wind they'd been feeling? The wind and the wires made a tattletale sound, and the wave broke over the railing. And every man knew, as the captain did too, 'twas the witch of November come stealing. The dawn came late and the breakfast had to wait, when the gales of November came slashing. When afternoon came, it was freezing rain in the face of a hurricane west wind. To feed you. At 7 p.m. a main hatchway gave in. He said, fellas, it's been good to know you. The captain wired in, he had water coming in, and the good ship and crew was in peril. Later that night, when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours. The searchers all say they'd have made Whitefish Bay if they'd put 15 more miles behind her. They might have split up or they might have capsized. They may have drove deep and took water. And all that remains is the faces and the names of the wives and the sons and the daughters. Lake Huron rolls, Superior scenes in the rooms of her ice water mansion. Oh, Michigan steams like a young man's dreams. The islands and bays are for sportsmen. And farther below, Lake Ontario takes in what Lake Erie can send her. The iron boats go as the mariners all know, with the gales of November remembered. Gales of November come early.